morning and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet, and I'm here in the studio with Polka Doc. The late Patty Fink will probably be joining us in just a few minutes. Laurent is off today. His father-in-law passed away this week, and he's going to be a pallbearer at the funeral today. So our sympathy, our hearts go out to Laurent, and I know he was very, very close with his father-in-law. We have with us Abby Deeds. She's been with us before. She is the author of a book called Queer Questions, Straight Talk, 108 Frank and Provocative Questions It's Okay to Ask Your Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual Loved One. We're not talking about the book, though, today, are we, Abby? How are you today?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Very good. Well, you know, it's like early in the morning. It's real early in the morning where you are. Thank you for getting up so early to talk to us.
You're welcome.
We're going to talk about a number of things. One of the things that we thought about when we got in touch a couple of weeks ago was let's talk about Prop 8. You're out in California where Prop 8 is taking place, but it's going to have national implications, so we're certainly interested in it across the country. But yesterday, something happened with Secretary of State Clinton that is monumental.
Yeah, and it's sort of a twofer, actually, because it was a question of talking the talk and walking the walk.
Mm-hmm.
She made a beautiful speech to member states of the UN on LGBT rights. I mean, that was the focus of the speech, and kind of stated as a matter of course the American commitment to LGBT rights on an international level, and that includes addressing our own problems. And that really is the first time that we've seen that kind of huge statement from, you know, on high, kind of saying as a people, as a country, and internationally speaking, we recognize and we stand for LGBT rights as human rights. And then that was also hand in hand with executive order from the president, kind of saying, and not only is this just, you know, sound good stuff to the UN, that he issued an executive order saying that the U.S. officially in all dealings with both international aid and asylum seekers and just our relationship to the world would formally have to start dealing with LGBT rights.
Right. What was so interesting about it, too, was that partially was the timing. And the timing is that the same thing that has to do with religious rights, and there's an office dealing with foreign aid and religious rights,
mm-hmm.
it's about to sunset because Congress just can't come up with funding.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they don't pass this by the 16th of December, I believe, we won't be dealing with religious rights, which we should. I mean, there should be religious freedom everywhere. I'm not saying, hey, we're knocking off religion. But it's just kind of ironic that...
Well, you know, and you bring up a really good point, because the right, and the far right, I want to be clear about this, because there are a lot of people on the right who are very supportive of LGBT rights, as they feel like that's just individual freedom, you know, just like anything else. But sort of the wacky right has been using religious freedom as a way to oppose same-sex marriage and LGBT equality, saying that somehow, you know, we are stepping on their religious rights. And I don't think anyone in our community wants to do that. I mean, I think we all sort of feel like you can believe what you want. Your ministers can perform whatever marriages they want to perform, yada, yada, yada. But when it comes to what the state is doing, what the government's doing, that's a separate issue. I think we agree on that, and that's such a red herring that's being used pretty effectively.
And it is being used effectively for ridiculous reasons, I guess. Or maybe it's for effective reasons. It's... But they don't conflict with each other as far as I see.
Right.
So.
Right. And what? No one wants to make churches do things that are against their basic principles unless, you know, they're actively hurting people. But, you know, that's another subject.
Sure.
Well, I think one of the things that strikes me so funny is that the far right, and as you say, there are many on the right who do support us, but the far right talks about it, you know, well, it's a choice, and therefore we have to discriminate against you. And I'm like, well, freedom of religion is protected in our Constitution, and religion is completely a choice.
Yeah, well, you know, they want the cake.
So, well, but some choices should be protected and some choices
right.
should
But at the
right,
same time,
you know.
there are religions that today and have for, you know, millennia, no doubt, denied people the right to marry in their church or their synagogue or their mosque. And, you know, oftentimes it's, you know, mixed religion couples and that sort of thing. And today
you know,
the government doesn't come after them and nobody sues them because a Jewish person couldn't get married in a Roman Catholic church.
Right. I mean, we're really clear on this from a constitutional standpoint.
Well,
and I think that people are using a lack of understanding of our legal history and our real and what those core values really mean as a way to as a weapon against us.
Well, the part that I like is, well, my religion, I believe in full freedom of religion, and my religion happens to have same-sex marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Well, aren't you infringing on my religion's rights by forbidding my religion to have marriages that are recognized?
Right.
So.
And I think that's huge, and it's been a tack that we've not taken really any.
I've been saying that all along, that that's
I know,
an
but there's,
area
there's
that
been
we
no,
should be using.
There's been no concerted effort within the LGBT activist movement
right.
towards civil rights to deploy that. If anything, I think
you're right.
Faith and values, so to speak, have been put to the fore with projects like that, with the HRC. And others to kind of organize those you know areas of faith that have
we've allowed freedom of religion to be co-opted by far right religious groups.
Right. Even today, you know, I'll never forget the question I had. I was a delegate to the 2004 Democratic National Convention, and the reporter from Family Network or somewhere came down to the Texas delegation and sort of shouted down, and we had. You know, Christians and Jews and Muslims and Hindus in our delegation, and agnostics and atheists, I'm sure, and said, is anyone here a Christian? And all the heads turned up, and we're like, what are you talking about? You know, why is this relevant? And so several people raised their hands and turned. I said, I'm a recovering Southern Baptist, and I'm gay, and she didn't want to talk to me. But the woman she did talk to was from Waco, actually, and went to a very progressive Baptist church.
Mm-hmm.
And her first question to her was, how can you be a Democrat and a Christian? And I just thought that was just such bullpucky.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Such an,
and,
to
know,
even ask the
right.
question, you know?
I mean, that's it. I'm also such a civil libertarian, so, like, you know, I want everyone to also feel free to ask those questions or, you know, and go to those places, but, you know, that's just me.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I think we have kind of drop the ball on that, where we have just said, okay, religion is a right thing, and you know, most of us, it doesn't just come down that neatly, and certainly, I've had a lot of people, very religious people in my life, you know, stand up for me because they think this is part of their Christian values. And I'm all for that.
Exactly.
well, of course, everybody doesn't have to agree on everything, but
yeah.
Everybody should be supporting each other's rights to live their lives as they choose, as long as they're not hurting anybody else.
Yeah, it seems real simple, doesn't it?
It seems that way to me. It seems like it takes a whole lot of effort to impose your values on other people when I have enough trouble just living my own life.
Exactly.
But, you know, years ago, in decades ago, there had been a long, very ingrained tradition in certainly the Democratic Party, and I think to a degree in the Republican Party for a very long time, that sort religion was sort of off limits. If you think about the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, and even into the 60s, and that's why there was such a hullabaloo when Jack Kennedy was running, and he had to suddenly it was an issue because he was a Catholic and he might take orders from the Pope, and you know, and so he had to sort of explain himself, and yet it felt incredibly awkward for the country, you know, to talk about this, because this is his really that's his business, that everybody has the right to their own, and I don't want them coming after me like that. Why should I be denied a job or denied, you know, some sort of litmus test for something I want to do in my life because of what my religious beliefs are?
Isn't it interesting that people really did kind of get it at that time, that it did make them uncomfortable prying into someone's very personal life like that? And they were able to make that connection to their own lives.
But now, 50 years later, people aren't getting it that they're prying by imposing their religious values on Mitt Romney.
Right.
Oh, and on us.
But, you know, Mitt Romney's a good point because it's not, I mean, I think it's probably no surprise. I'm no big fan of Mitt Romney's. But I have questions about his religion for sure, but it's been offensive to me as an American.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, I sound like my grandparents, that his religion is an issue the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
And for the very same reason when people are reaching into my private life and my belief system to impose their beliefs on it, it offends me. But it offends me because it's just, you know, it's not what our country was set up to be like.
Well, but Romney has a record to run on. And
yeah.
When
so
you
does
say...
John Huntsman. John Huntsman's a Mormon and an ex-governor of a western state.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Sure. But they have records to run on. And, Abby, when you say you're no fan of Mitt Romney, I think it has more to do with his record than it does with
his
religion.
I mean, the guy's probably squeaky clean, I'm thinking. It's just that politically, I can't get behind him. And there was also some weird report about him putting his dog on top of his car at some point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and driving to Canada with his dog strapped to the roof of his car or something.
Yes, that bothers me more.
You know, and his big vice is chocolate milk.
You know? digging up skeletons in his closet, I think that's going to take a long time.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to do that.
But what we do see is, like, yesterday on CNN.com, there was an editorial, an op-ed piece by Tony Perkins from the Family Research Council,
mm-hmm.
making the case that Jesus was a free marketer.
Oh, that's so interesting to me, because he does seem a little more socialist to me.
Well, it's a tortured logic, believe me. Go by there and read it. The pages and bazillion pages of comments from readers were pretty clear that they thought he was smoking something.
I don't know. I think I'd like to buy stock in that one.
Absolutely. I do think there are a lot of people who see the connection. Absolutely. I'm struggling, so I may need to read the article.
No, I want to buy some stock in that one because I sure didn't do well in the market this week with my American Airlines stock.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, no, that's several more years of work for me right now. We're talking about the candidates. We're going to get into Prop 8 right after the break, but let's just talk about the candidates a little bit. Romney has a record. You're saying Huntsman has a record. The one candidate that didn't have much of a record dropped out this week.
Right.
I'm so disappointed. He was so entertaining.
Didn't Rachel Maddow just think that his whole candidacy was an art project?
Well, it certainly was a book tour.
Yeah, absolutely. I just sort of couldn't believe it went on as long as it did. But all good things must come to an end.
It's sad. So that leaves us with Gingrich.
Yeah, he's not as fun to watch.
No, he's not, but... He could be a train wreck.
Oh, yeah. I think he is going to be, but I've felt that about other people in the past and was proven wrong.
Hmm.
If he continues to talk about children in poverty, he will take another dive and they'll look for somebody else.
Yeah, I'm not worried so much about this upcoming election. I was worried a few months ago, but not so much anymore. I think if Newt is the one to beat, anything could happen, but I'm not buying his whole position as a family man. I mean, it is strange to me that when we talk so much about preserving the family and marriages and everything else, that Newt's the guy.
Right. Seems like it to me. I mean, look, he's had as many wives as all the Democratic presidents put together since Carter.
Well, that was a long count. Yes. Yeah, he is a strange guy. His position on LGBT rights, I don't even know where he stands. I do know that he's not a huge supporter of his sister.
True.
It's his sister, yeah.
Yep, his half-sister. I know very well. We should have her on the show.
We do need to have Candace on the show again. Because it's been at least 10 years since she's been on. But, I'm thinking a good ticket would be the guy with the lesbian sister and the woman with the gay husband.
Yeah. You'd think our issues would be dealt with.
One would think.
Oh, my gosh. I saw a political cartoon yesterday or day before with the three top runners that were the GOP candidates at the starting line of a foot race, and the ref is holding the starter gun to his head. And he's the GOP, and these are the candidates. He's going to start this race.
Now, the one candidate that I really do like, who they won't let him into any of the into any of the debates, they won't let him... They won't give him any publicity whatsoever. When he reached the 1% level of support that was needed to get into the debates, they raised it to 2% just to keep him. And that's Fred Karger, who is openly gay. Fred is one of the people who he funded basically the anti-Prop 8 movement in California, and he's. I don't know. I'm saying he's getting nowhere. At least he's still in the race.
I have no idea.
He's been in really from the early beginning.
He was the first person to actually register with the Federal Election Commission, and he's been spending his time mostly up in New Hampshire, hoping that the others will self-destruct. I mean, this is his strategy, and
he's sitting there.
Yeah, and that okay, here I am. I'm still running. And his strategy really is to watch the others self-destruct and to help them self-destruct.
I've been thinking that's Huntsman's strategy as well.
Uh-huh.
Who is, of course, the only one in that field that doesn't make me want to run around pulling my hair out naked.
Mm-hmm.
But that's interesting. I didn't know he was actually a candidate.
Oh, he was the first one to register. He has stayed in the race. And
he's getting no press.
And he's getting absolutely no press, except for places like the Dallas Voice, where I've been writing about him occasionally. Because it's just interesting, the first openly gay candidate for president.
And it's such a wide field, because, in Florida now, that minister of that church who burned the Quran, he's in the race, too. But I don't think he's getting...
Yeah, I've heard about that.
I don't think he's getting 0.0001%.
And he's registered with the Federal Election Commission and
apparently
getting
so.
On ballots? Okay, good for him.
Free speech.
We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON. FM. Our guest today is Abby Dees. She is actually one of the 18,000 couples who married in California during that six-month window where marriage was legal in California. We're going to talk a little bit about that, about the history of Prop 8, where it's going. We're talking to Abby Dees. I'm here with Patty Fink. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
KNON thanks you for your pledge to our recent pledge drive. Now's the time to make your pledge count. Send your pledge to KNON, P.O. Box 710-909, Dallas, Texas 75371. If you missed our pledge drive, you can still support community radio by pledging on the web at KNON.org. Your pledge only counts if you pay it. KNON, Box 710-909, Dallas, Texas 75371. Be sure to put the name of the show you're supporting on the check, money order, or the envelope. Questions about KNON's pledge drive, call 214-828-9500, extension 234.
It's the voice of the people, KNON.
KNON thanks Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions for their support of KNON. Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions provides KNON all our copy services. Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions sells, leases, rents, and services a full line of color and black and white Canon copiers with scanning, printing, and faxing capabilities. Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions offers wholesale packaging back to the consumer market in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. Overstock, demo models, and used equipment with full warranty is available. For more information, 214-431-5191 or BEYERImaging.com.
Friday's a KNON Christmas Blues Party and CD release party for the new CD from the Silvertones, You Got Me Spinning. This Friday, KNON has its first benefit event in the newly reopened Pearl. Come on out this Friday for the Silvertones playing tracks from their new CD, You Got Me Spinning. Opening the show will be two outstanding special guests, the John Ellis Band and Mr. Houston and the Iceberg. We'll have free pork and red chili sauce, chicken and chili, and jalapeno tamales with two sides. That's Texas-sized 8-ounce tamales this Friday from La Victoria's of Dallas. Advance tickets only $6. Dinner and the show for only $6. $6. Tickets are at KNON.org. Doors are at 8 p.m. Music at 8:30. Pearl is located at 2038 Commerce in downtown Dallas. The Silvertones, the John Ellis Band, and Mr. Houston and the Icebreak. Three bands in the middle. $6 in advance at KNON.org. We'll see you this Friday at the KNON Blues Christmas Party and the Silvertones CD Release Party at Pearl. This is a KNON benefit event. See you this Friday night.
I'm just wild about her. We're just wild about it.
Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet, and I am here in the studio with Patty Fink. On the phone with us is Abby Dees from California. She is one of those wacky California couples who decided to destroy traditional marriage as we know it.
Mm-hmm.
And
every day.
So, Abby, after you got married, do you know how many opposite sex marriages you were directly responsible for destroying?
Well, you know, it's hard to count.
It is.
And I'm sure it changes every day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, keeping it tally, I gave that up a long time ago.
Yeah. But it's something that it's nice to know that you're directly responsible for a certain number of opposite-sex marriages breaking up.
Yeah. I mean, I think marriage is crumbling, you know, before my very eyes in California, and that was the whole plan, of course.
Because we have the power, you know.
Yeah, we have that much power. We have so much political power and social power.
See, what we do here is we concentrate our energy to create tornadoes and hurricanes.
Yes, I know.
And drought.
I know you do that.
And drought.
Well, keep up the good work over there.
Thank you.
You're making a difference.
We're trying to. Give us a little bit of the history of Proposition 8. In June of 2008... same-sex marriage became legal in California.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people ask that question of, well, why is Prop 8 so unique? You know, this kind of stuff exists all over the country. And there are kind of two big reasons why Prop 8 is unique and affects people. It's that California actually had same-sex marriage. People went out and got married, like my partner and me, who was glaring at me for talking this early in the morning, this loud, right now.
Tell her we're just trying to destroy her marriage.
I know. I'm doing it very well right now. So we actually had people get married, and then the voters in California voted for Prop 8 to ban same-sex marriage. And, of course, it's always hard to talk about because it's one of those things where if you're for Prop 8, you're against same-sex marriage. If you're against Prop 8, you're for same-sex marriage. But, you know, it was the only place where marriages happened, and then they got taken away.
Mm-hmm.
And that creates a very interesting legal situation in California because it's not just an abstract thing. You have a group of people that got married, you know, sort of got married in that window, and if we say, for example, if my partner and I got divorced, I couldn't then go out like a straight person and marry another woman. I had my one chance, and that's unusual.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are all these people who missed that opportunity, and so they can't get married in California.
Yet.
It creates a very messy legal fabric. And that's the basis for Prop 8 going to federal court. And without getting too legally technical about it, our strategy as a community legally has been historically to stay in the states, to do all our work in the states, and then sort of through critical mass at the state level, then we can change federal law and deal with things on a federal level. But some very enterprising lawyers who were actually the lawyers for, you know, on both representing Bush and representing Gore in the case, Bush v. Gore, actually stepped up in support of us and our community to have Prop 8 declared unconstitutional in federal court. And that's what happened. It got declared unconstitutional in a lower court. And so now it's moving its way up to, it's in the circuit court now, which is, there are 11 circuits. I'm wobbling on that is embarrassing. You know, and the circuit is the one step below the Supreme Court. So there's a very good chance that Prop 8 is going to head to the Supreme Court of the U.S., and that will affect every single American.
And in between what the circuit court asked the California Supreme Court for was a decision on standing of the defendants.
Yeah, and so there's been a lot of procedural stuff that's bogged the case down for the last year. The circuit court already heard the arguments last year on the legal merits of the case. But then there was this question of who gets to represent Prop 8. If Prop 8 is the law of California, you know, I hate to say it, but it is, then the job to defend that law would normally fall to the governor and the state's attorney. But they backed off. Jerry Brown, Kamala Harris, our attorney, and prior to Jerry Brown, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
And Jerry Brown was the Attorney General.
Yes,
right?
Jerry Brown was the Attorney General. I'll say this for Schwarzenegger. He wasn't always a fan of the gays, but he did step up in the end, and he washed his hands of Prop 8 and said, we're just going to let this one go. We're not going to stand up and defend this law. We don't believe in it.
Well, and completely washed his hands. That's the least he could do.
Yes.
Because twice he vetoed a full bill came to his desk for signature that would have done marriage equality done.
Right. Well, of course, those times he was facing re-election. And this, you know, as he's leaving office this last term, full term, no, he didn't have anyone to, you know, to make happy, so he could do whatever he wanted. Ah, well, such is politics. But so this is interesting. So you have this sort of law that's an orphan that no one wants to stand behind, you know, in their official capacity. So the question was, do the people that put the law on the ballot, the organization, the national organization for marriage, NOM, or the, you know, one of the big groups, did they get to stand up and defend the law and actually essentially represent the people of California? I don't know about you, but I don't really want them representing me as a citizen of my state, and there's a good reason I don't want them to do that. But without someone standing there representing the state at the circuit court level, it meant that there was no fight. If there was no one to have, you know, there are two sides to fight, and if there hadn't, and that's called standing. I'm sorry, I hope I'm not getting legal land.
That's the term that even the newspapers are using.
Even the newspapers are using it.
So, yeah, it's called standing, so when people see it in the paper and they see something about Prop 8, they're going to see that it's, and it's not NOM, it's some local California group that is the one that was given the standing, because they're the ones who collected the signatures.
You know, and I have to tell you, I have like a mental block about the names of these organizations.
And that's fine. That's healthy.
And by the way, if our listeners, you know, watch a lot of, you know, 20 years of Law and Order, they probably know the word standing.
That's true.
Yeah. Yes, that's true. Well, you know, it really means, do you have a dog in the fight?
Right.
Or your dog in the race. And, you know, and the way you get, one of the ways you get standing is to show that you're experiencing a personal harm or a loss, or, you know, that you're really directly invested in this. And so it's hard for them, you know, they're sort of trotting out the same old arguments that, yeah, that same-sex marriage, it harms them because it's undermining their traditional marriages. And showing how that happens has been very difficult for them. But they did, the circuit court said, well, we're really unclear whether you actually get to have standing, and therefore, you know, we need this question answered, and they sort of punted it back to the California Supreme Court to say whether they did or not as a matter of state law. And the California Supreme Court said, yes, we think they have standing under California law. And it looks like the district court is going to accept that for their purposes. So, in other words, they do get to you know, represent Prop 8 and the state of California in the circuit court.
And basically what they said was, it's not so, they weren't really ruling that they had standing and a reason that they were actually being harmed. But it was more, well, you're the ones who put it on the ballot, so you have standing to defend the thing that you put on the ballot.
Which I must say, from just in terms of the history of the law around this stuff, is a very strange decision.
Mm-hmm.
Because prior to this point, it's always been kind of an accepted truth that the political groups that put something on the ballot don't just automatically get to have standing on something,
mm-hmm.
representing that. Otherwise, you would have people filing suits about any particular little law that bugs them, left and right.
Now, I want to point out that this kind of thing could never happen here in Texas, that as far as we see it, California's government is a mess. We don't have these kind of ballot propositions, first of all. But let's get away from the Proposition 8 and same-sex marriage fight. California has had ballot propositions that, on the one hand, Californians voted that you can't raise your taxes, mm-hmm. and then you've had on the same ballot a proposition that said that you have to fund certain things for education and it has to be funded, but yeah. we can't raise your taxes to do it, but you have to pay for this.
You know, I'm not a big fan of this initiative system mm-hmm. because of that, because people are voting for things based on kind of bumper sticker understanding of it. Not everybody, but, you know, most of us, when we support a law, kind of think, oh, that sounds all right. Mm-hmm. You know, but we haven't done the work of sitting down and reading the code and seeing how it affects other things, or looking at the California budget sheet, for example, and that kind of thing. So we've tied ourselves in knots.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems like we do vote for people to go to the state capital to legislate.
Mm-hmm.
That's a representative democracy. I don't know why we need to override it. And then we have this ridiculous thing, but maybe something I didn't make clear about Prop 8 is that Prop 8 did not only made same-sex marriage illegal in California, it put it in the California Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And that, so, for example, in the state of California, a simple majority can vote something like that into the Constitution. That makes me very uncomfortable. I think there were a lot of people who really did not understand what they were voting for, mm-hmm. but they did it anyway, and that's a heck of a power.
Well, I think we have the same issue in Texas. When we had our Prop 2 fight in 2005, I think most adult Texas voters who participated didn't really get it, that it was a superdoma, mm-hmm. that it would be no recognition. Because today, just a mere, 6 years later, 67-68% of Texans support civil unions for gay couples
yeah.
in Texas.
Including a majority of Republicans.
Yes. When I speak to voters out there who, when we talk about this election in 2005, they say, I wouldn't have voted
that's
that.
That's not what
I
voted for.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. not what I understood it to be.
Yeah.
And we did have this Prop 2, the difference between California's propositions that anybody can go out and get and our few propositions that we have that are usually on the level of
a bridge and
in some county yeah. that nobody's ever heard of. But what our propositions usually, or what our propositions are things that the legislature did not finish, and the legislature has put those on the ballot to be voted on to become constitutional amendments.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
That makes a little more sense to me on the surface.
Mm-hmm. Right. And taking it out of this particular discussion of Proposition 8 and same-sex marriage, they're usually, like Patty said, on the level of building a new lake in some mm-hmm. Western county that has a water shortage or something, and why the legislature can't decide to just do that, and why that has to be in the Constitution. That's our own.
Yeah, one,
readiness.
It goes to the people to decide, and then right. two, it's in the Constitution.
Right.
You
it's
have a
bizarre.
Very interesting Constitution, I'll bet.
Well,
it's hundreds and hundreds of pages long.
Yeah, it's thousands of issues are shoved into our Constitution in Texas.
Well, that's problematic.
But the good thing is that the legislature only meets every other year, so we don't have this every year.
It's true. It is another country over there. And I know people say that about us.
Right, right. Anyway, Prop 8 right now, where it stands, is...
There are a couple of issues that are being decided.
Right. What are those?
And so, first of all, there is the, review of the lower court's decision. Did the lower court act legally speaking, in coming up with their determination that Prop 8 was unconstitutional?
And by the lower court, you're referring to...
The federal trial court, Judge Vaughn Walker.
Walker, right, okay.
So that's the main question, and everyone's always thinking, well, that's the most important thing. But we've had to kind of swat away these other annoying things that have come up. So one of them is standing, and that's a big one. And I will say that any time the circuit court can say can actually turn around and say, well, we don't think you have standing, and they can make that decision. Or the U.S. Supreme Court can even say that this case you know, can't continue due to standing. I mean, that'll come up a lot. But then there are these other sort of ridiculous things that have been joined in with a case. For example, can it be, can the videotapes of the original trial and the audio tapes be released? And they were not released originally, and it was mostly the yes on Prop 8 people saying, oh, well, our witnesses are going to be targeted by those mean, you know, hateful gays. For testifying, and they actually got some sway with that argument.
Don't those people who testified on their side, aren't they heroes on our side because they proved themselves to be such morons?
They ended up being some of our best witnesses.
So why would we be targeting them other than?
We want to celebrate them.
I
want
to say thank
them.
You. I want them as a guest on my show.
They were so inept. And
I read it on the internet.
I mean, yes, they use the internet as their final word for, you know, whether, you know, if something's true, you know, whether we are bad parents because they found it on the internet. Mm-hmm. You know, and the Walkie Right has made some hay about that they sort of say, well, the reason why our case was so weak that all of our witnesses were, you know, hiding in their homes because they were so afraid of us. You know, and if they'd only been allowed to speak, it would have been so eloquent and wonderful. So, you know, that's wacky. And there was a decision to release those tapes. Judge Walker retired, so Judge Ware, who has replaced him, said those tapes can be released, and I think they should. And we generally do allow access to these sorts of things because they're of interest to the people. So that ruling was stayed, meaning the tapes still haven't been released, and that's being decided.
If we release these tapes, will more traditional marriages be destroyed?
Well, you know, it could happen. I mean, yeah, this is the argument that somehow this is going to hurt people to have this judicial proceeding. It's very important to current public debate and opinion. You know, to have this released is that it's going to cause harm is so ridiculous and so antithetical to our basic American values.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another word that I'd like the LGBT community to reclaim is values.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
You know, we were talking about religion. We should also reclaim the values and family words.
Right, because we're talking about forming families.
Yes, exactly.
Legal families.
And then the final thing, and this is so insane, but this is also, there are going to be hearings about this in the circuit court that will be available online tomorrow to watch. They are going to discuss whether Judge Walker's sexual orientation,
mm-hmm.
gay, means that his ruling in the district court and in the lower court should be vacated, mm-hmm. because he was a gay.
This is such hogwash. Then everybody else who's you know, believed to be heterosexual is biased as well.
Right.
Automatically, you know, by the inherent existence of their sexual orientation, which, by the way, many heterosexual people don't think they have a sexual orientation, and they do.
I know.
It's just like
Americans don't have an accent.
Yep, and dead people have a temperature, you
mm-hmm.
know? Everybody's got one.
We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. Our guest is Abby Dees. She's in California and working on this Prop 8 and watching real closely Prop 8 as it works its way through the courts. We're going to be talking more about that. I'm curious about whether it would have been different if Jerry Brown decided to defend, because mm-hmm. your level of defense could be that this is nonsense. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly, though, right after this.
If you don't want your old SUV or other gas guzzler, the KNON Vehicle Donation Program can take it off your hands. Call us today at 877-KNON-AUTO or donate online at KNON.org. Our representative will take all of your information and arrange a convenient time to pick up your vehicle. All it takes is a call to 877-KNON-AUTO and we'll create great programming from your old car, truck, or boat. 877-KNON-AUTO.
KNON on Twitter at KNON893FM.
Follow us now.
Be the first to find out about KNON events and get updates on KNON. That's KNON893FM on Twitter for updates on benefits, programming, and more.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON-FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
And this is Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet here in the studio with Patty Fink. And we are talking to Abby Dees, who is just a second. Doc, we're going to have you move your phone over away from the mics, even though that mic is off over there. We had a couple of phone calls that Doc is answering for us. And and you know what? It still is. It's coming across on the phone line. We're talking to Abby Dees. Abby is one of the 18,000 couples who married in California. She is following the Proposition 8 fight. Abby, I have a question about Jerry Brown. Now, he decided not to defend this.
Mm-hmm.
What if he had decided to defend it?
I think it would have looked a little like the original case
mm-hmm.
would have looked. The original case meaning when the California Supreme Court first declared that same-sex marriage was legal in California according to our Constitution. Schwarzenegger was his counsel was there defending an earlier version of Prop 8 called Proposition 22 that just had... it was like our little California DOMA.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny to watch that trial because it was so clear that they didn't really want to be there
mm-hmm.
and that they were just going through the motions and they were, it was the weakest argument. It took about 10 minutes and it seemed like they were almost going out of their way to mess up their own argument. Like they were being dragged, kicking and screaming into court to do that. So we got a little taste of that.
And I even mean, he goes into court, he says, "We are. You know, this is the law, here are the arguments against, and it is not my position, but here are the arguments against, I rest my case."
Yeah, you know, I think at a certain point, the other side could be able to, and I don't really know, you know, off the top of my head what the... you know, cases that would instruct about this would say.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say that at a certain point, if it's so obvious that their defense is not to defend it, that the other side could say that that they have effectively refused to defend it.
Okay.
I think it's really a good thing that we have this place now where those who put it on the ballot and brought forward all their expert witnesses...
Yes.
We've taken this path to get to the root of it, because and with the legal team that's you know taken this fight to the regular, incredible, exactly, and this is what we need to go forward to the Supreme Court, not some bogus case. There are sort of people are kind of, you know, halfway doing their jobs or mm-hmm. they're not enthusiastic about it. Here are the core groups.
Yeah,
and they couldn't defend it.
Right.
They really presented nothing. Okay, so where does it go from here? We're at a point where it's been decided they have standing. The circuit court, we're going to assume, will accept that decision.
Yeah. I think we can assume that, but we could be surprised. So today, at the instruction of the circuit court, there are going to be continued hearings on Prop 8 in front of the three-judge panel of the circuit court to discuss the Judge Von Walker was gay situation and You know when I write about this, the standing situation. That is today. No, videotaping. That's what's going to be discussed today, with the videotaping issue, and was, does the case need to be vacated because Von Walker was gay. And that's what's going to be argued for an hour or two this afternoon. And probably any time after today, they could release their ruling on the whole thing. All of those questions.
Okay.
And so I don't think it's going to happen tomorrow, but it could happen in the next couple of months. And depending on what the outcome of that is, one side could ask the circuit court to look at it again, but on banc, which means with more than the three judges, with the full panel. And they could say, no, we don't want to do this. Or they could decide to do it, or it could go straight up and be petitioned to the U.S. Supreme Court. The Supreme Court could refuse to hear it as well. They could, often the Supreme Court backs off on cases that are highly controversial.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that they will decide to hear this case when it gets there, and I think it will be knocking on its doors at least by 2013.
Do you think that if it were to make it to the United States Supreme Court, that all of these issues then could potentially be reasons to not hear it or reasons to hear it?
Yes, any of them could be.
So even they could even say that they don't even have standing.
Yes, they could. They could visit the standing thing again, and so that's possible. There are sort of good sides and bad sides to that. The good side, if either the circuit court or the Supreme Court decides that they don't have standing, is it means that the lower court decision stands and Prop 8 goes away, which is great. But I have a problem, and some people have a problem, with getting our victories through a procedural win. And I think it would give the other side an opportunity to say we were not allowed to air our case, and our opinions were squelched by these activist judges, mm-hmm. and they let same-sex marriage run rampant. I really do want these issues to be decided on their merits. And I think there's a lot of just so that's part of the record. If we win because of some technicality, I think that'll create cynicism around this process.
Mm-hmm. And it'll set us back, because the process to start over again with a great case to ask the issue, you know, to get to the heart of the matter, we'd have to start really all over, or wait for another case arising in the courts already. And I think a lot of people have, you know, been looking to this case to really get to the heart of it. Yeah.
Here's what I think is going to happen. And this is just, you know, obviously a guess, but I'm usually right. I think we're going to win in the circuit court. I think the other side will appeal en banc, so a 9-judge panel will then mm-hmm. hear it. I think we might even win there.
Mm-hmm.
If it gets appealed to the Supreme Court, here's what I think will happen. I think they will decide not to hear it. I think some of the more liberal judges will vote no because they agree with the lower court decision. I think somebody like Scalia will vote no because I think a number of people on the right would rather concede California and not mm-hmm. make another decision that's going to affect other states. And that mm-hmm. somebody like Scalia is petrified that this decision, if the Supreme Court rules on it, is going to apply to more states.
You could be right. And in which case you could say, well, then we've kind of gotten the best of both worlds. We haven't risked putting this up to the Supreme Court, which is not exactly a left-leaning court.
Right.
And we've made our point.
Mm-hmm.
And then we wait another time. And what we've done so far, if that is the case, is not all for naught. It really is part of the record. It is something that other courts will look at, even if it's not decisive for their jurisdiction.
Yeah, Judge Walker's ruling will stand then.
It will stand, and the discussion will have been aired. So I think there's something to that. I think they're going to hear it. And
I do too. I do think they're going to take it.
We've got a problem, and we have all sorts of different statuses, if I can say it that way, of marriage around this country. And the most obvious example is that my partner and I are married in California, and the minute we get off Plain in Tennessee, where we spend a lot of time, we're just strangers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
And we have some states that have full same-sex marriage, and we have some states that have banned domestic partnership. And
then we have the full faith and credit clause of the United States Constitution.
Faith and credit clause. And these are the only marriages that I'm aware of that are legal marriages in a particular state that aren't recognized in other states. And that's just such a, we're straying so far from, again, these core American principles and laws that have been in place for a long time and people have relied upon.
And these are vital records of a state, and that's what's in part of the thing that's included in the full faith and credit clause.
Right.
You know, death records, birth records, adoption records, marriage records, all those things.
I think if you die in Texas, that should not be recognized in California.
And
that's
just
the way it is.
Into what state? What's the alternative?
I think California is destroying death as we traditionally know it.
I thought the cryotherapy was in Arizona.
Oh, okay.
That's the kind of the thing, too, is the right also gets a lot of mileage out of saying, well, those wackos in California.
Mm-hmm.
And they would like us to just float off into the ocean, but I'm sorry, we're not going to.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, I thought Schwarzenegger did something very interesting, which it kind of crawls all over me and I laugh at the same time. When the two bills came before him in separate legislatures, to offer marriage equality from the ground up through the full legislative representative government of California, and he said no. One of his excuses was that it needs to go through the courts. And here's the rest of the right, the far right, saying no. Those activist judges, get it out of the court, take it to the people.
Right. Yes.
And I'm like, well, which is it?
Well,
the representative government that these people voted for. You know, mm-hmm. just to represent them in the legislature, voted for this.
Well, it's sort of like that argument that things should stay in the states. Yeah, this should be a states issue. That's such a trope.
Right.
And yet, when it goes the wrong way, suddenly things shouldn't be a states issue. We need
a constitutional amendment.
We need a federal constitutional amendment, because it shouldn't be in the states. Oh, come on. Pick your argument and stick with it. I was uncomfortable, just as a little side note, early when we were doing the state strategy, and we're still doing the state strategy, mm-hmm. as a community, we were using the argument, a lot of us, not everybody, that this should be decided by the states, and I thought that was dangerous. And it seems we see why that's dangerous. Not that things should be in the states, but that should be our official line,
mm-hmm.
that this should be decided by the states, because the states are left and right taking away people's partnership and marriage rights.
Right.
Well, had we done that, had we not had a Lawrence v. Texas to clear all of those laws up in 16 states or whatever it was that were
mm-hmm.
affected, I mean, there had been a real march to decriminalize being gay, in state by state by state,
mm-hmm.
and that didn't really work very well. And Lawrence v. Texas just made it very clear for everybody, it's over. No more
and
persecution of gay people.
It was a surprising verdict. Anthony Kennedy, in a beautiful decision. No one thought he was going to do that, but he did.
And one thing brilliant about Walker's decision is that the person that he quoted the most in his decision was Kennedy.
Yeah.
So if it goes to the Supreme Court, Kennedy will have to disagree with himself in order to vote against or to vote for Prop 8. Yeah.
You can only hope. I am worried, like everybody probably should be, that going to the Supreme Court really is betting all your chips on one hand. And this is not a sympathetic court. I just wrote an argument. I have a syndicated column called Thinking Out Loud that I think you guys might have there. And I just made the argument last week that I felt we still needed to do this push to the Supreme Court, because I don't think it's going to change. Even with another 4 years of Obama in the White House, even if we have, I can't imagine that we would have just a run of Democratic presidents over the next 20 years.
Right.
I think this court is going to continue moving to the right, and
mm-hmm.
it may be two generations before that changes, if it ever does.
Sure.
But, you know, there was a The putting it all in one basket was a big fear in, you know, landmark cases like, I believe it was Hernandez v. Texas, that basically asked the question, are Latino people white or brown, you know, under the law? And that community was very fearful that this is our shot. What if they go against us?
Yeah.
And, you know, you just had to go on faith and say, we've got the best people up there. Let's go with it. We're right because we're right on the issue.
And to your point that this we'd have to start all over again. There is a maxim in the law that good cases make good law, and this is a good case.
Yeah.
Not only are the facts good, now technically speaking, a appeals court or a Supreme Court does not look at the facts, but they're human, and they will look at the facts. I mean, the facts do matter. And the facts are so clean here that it gives the law, it shows the law in its finest light. It shows the Constitution in its finest light. And so, and the record of the lower court was so complete. Von Walker may have been gay, but when he was, during that trial, he got a lot of flack from LGBT activists for giving the other side too much opportunity to air their point. That, you know, things that a lot of us felt should be declared irrelevant or evidentiary non-starters. Things about do gay parents make, you know, gay people make good parents, so that kind of stuff that is almost irrelevant to the question. He wanted all of that in.
Right. This is the case.
Right.
Abby Dees, I want to thank you for being with us. We have about 30 seconds. Okay. Just tell us about Lesbians and Their Straight Friends.
Lesbians and Straight Friends. New article I did with Ruth V. Alcade from MTV Real World in the Good Men Project. Do a Google search for the Good Men Project, talking about our bro friends.
And we'll have a link to your new Facebook page.
Great.
On our website.
Much.
I want to thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Abby, so much.
Thanks, guys.
And next week we have Letitia McDaniel with us. She's going to do
we're
our
gonna do news.
Monthly news roundup.